Welcome to Circuit Breaker episode number 15. I think I'm on 15. Or it might have been 13 was...
12 was South By.
No, 13 was South By. South By was a special episode, so that was 12. So anyways, welcome in. You just heard my guest for this week, Jim Williams, part of Capstone Metering. They make a very cool water meter, but what does that have to do with IoT? Well, it's connected. And it's controllable, and it has a lot of cool learning behind it. So, Jim, who are you? What is Capstone?
My name's Jim. I'm VP of Product Development at Capstone Metering, and one of the founders. My father and I actually founded the company back when I was in, gosh, the original idea was when I was in high school, back in like 2007, 2008, and dropped out of college to pursue this full-time, and we've been hitting it hard ever since. So
yeah, you guys are kicking butt. So the water meter, from my best understanding, is basically you can control it. You can turn it on and off remotely via some sort of network. Mm-hmm. Usually you guys are using right now 2G, 3G, but you guys are certifying on Cat M pretty soon, which is exciting.
We are.
And then you can also do some other cool things, right? So you can tell between two water meters where there's a leak in the pipe. And then also you can tell exactly if there's a leak in the house because you know exactly how much water is going through it. So what else does this water meter do? What data are you guys collecting? What are you guys able to do with it? And then how sensitive is the meter as well?
Sure. So the whole premise behind the meter as a device, we were doing this before really IoT was a thing. And we just knew we needed more data from that location if we were going to start to solve these real problems that water municipalities were having. And so what we did is we took the meter and we crammed every sensor we possibly could into it. And so we knew we needed flow, and we needed flow at a higher granular level than anybody else was providing it. So we knew we needed minute type interval. We knew we needed to be able to tell drips in a house. We knew we needed pressure, right? Because pressure's the potential energy behind a system, and so we knew we needed to know that. Coupled with flow, you can tell a lot. We knew we needed temperature, because chlorine levels can differ depending on temperature, or we've got meters deployed in all the way as far north as North Dakota, where freeze notifications are a big deal, because if that meter freezes, then somebody's basement's going to be flooded.
Right.
And we also coupled that with a actuator and a ball valve internally where we could shut the water off remotely via the cellular network. And so we started with 1X cellular forever ago. And we actually still have a healthy amount of 1X radios deployed, actually. It's a good technology. It just keeps chugging along.
Well, hang on. But with all the I know... You and I had talked about this. We're not going to go deep down into the network part of it, but this does affect you in the sense of your water meter is buried. So you also put it doesn't it self charges and it self runs off of water flow, mm-hmm. and then it also has a battery in it. So if you do shut it off and it doesn't have water flow going through it, then it has a battery to last itself a while. But yep. If it's the old radio, how do you update it? How do you upgrade it? What happens with that?
So we knew early on we had to be radio agnostic in our platform because cellular networks change, and a lot of low-powered wide area networks were starting to kind of be conceived. And so we knew that we had to leave ourselves the ability to change that radio. And so the radio module in the antenna is a completely separate unit from the meter. That we just have a connector, and that thing pops off and can be changed out, hot swapped in about 2 seconds. And the meter reauthorizes with the new module and picks up where it left off.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got this meter, this really cool meter that's got all these temperature sensors in it. And like I said, like we just told our audience, so you can tell where things are going. Mm-hmm. Now, the big thing is you can tell drips inside of a house. We'll start with the house side, right? So pressure matters for things like sprinkler systems.
Yeah.
Right? So you've got sprinkler systems that, you know, you can't run certain days, especially here in Texas, right, where we have restrictions on you can only water if your address is odd, then you can only water on Monday and Wednesday, maybe. And then if your address number is even, you can only water on Tuesday and Thursdays, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that piece of it. But then if they're watering at different parts of the day, then the pressure also determines how much, and systems, sprinkler systems are determined off of sprinkler, I mean, are off of water flow and water pressure,
yep.
not necessarily something else. And so you may have like really crappy pressure that day and not actually water your lawn.
Yeah. So we did a fairly large study on this. And what we determined is that, we first extracted a bunch of sprinkler data from our data sets and then compared that consumption for those sprinkler events. And it's kind of nice that everybody runs their sprinkler on timers because then it's predictable. So we know, like, okay, it's going to run for the same amount of time every time it runs, roughly.
Right.
And so we were able to extract that sprinkler data out and then compare it to the consumption of when that sprinkler system ran to the pressure that the system was at when the sprinkler started. And we saw a very strong correlation between higher system pressure, more water being consumed, lower system pressure, less water being consumed. And it's rough, but a good rule of thumb that we discovered was that for about every pound of system, a pound of pressure that's added onto the system, it's about 1% more in water consumption. This also applies to faucets in your house. So if you have a low flow shower head that's set to, if you read the side of it, it says 4 gallons per minute at 40 PSI or at 60 PSI. But if you're at 90 PSI, not 60, you're going to have 30% more consumption out of that. And so helping cities be able to tune their pressure and keep their pressure stable, because you'll see a lot of times in the middle of the night, pressure will go up, which means all those sprinkler systems are going to use more water. You're going to overwater your grass, and you're going to be inefficient in your consumption.
That's crazy. So related to all that inefficiency and consumption, I'm just thinking about it. And so you're testing consumption. Can you control how much water is coming through then and adjust the pressure off of the water meter right now?
We can't yet. We've toyed with that in the lab on being able to tailor the amount of water. Part of that's and do partial shutoffs and things like that. Some cities have ordinances where the city cannot turn the water off on a resident. And so, but being able to turn that down where you can run a shower, sink, dishwasher, things like that. But you can't run a sprinkler system,
right?
Because if you're not paying your bill, you know, there's some restrictions there. So we're playing with some of that.
Interesting. That's actually really fascinating. And so related to all of this pressure, right, in certain areas, I did this in my dorm all the time because we didn't have a thermostat in one of the dorms I lived in freshman year. And so basically you'd put a textbook down on the air vent coming into your room, but then everybody down the line would also put a textbook down. So now you're causing the very end to have higher pressure. I mean, that's pretty standard.
Yep.
You can also, between that, because between the two houses, you can tell kind of pressure and some other things. You're able to detect leaks, so you don't have to tear down the whole street to go find the leak. And that's a huge issue that we don't really realize. I mean, you kind of put it perfectly in another scenario that I didn't even think about, which is your car. How you get gas to your car versus how we get gas to our house, or not gas to our house, but another water to our house. And that's huge. That's a huge issue that we all deal with and every municipality deals with, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. We can get a drop of oil from, you know, far off places,
yeah.
put it in a tanker, put it in a boat, get it here, get it in a refinery, put it through a fuel pump into your car, and your car will tell you exactly how much you've used. I mean, every drop is accounted for. And a lot of people will say, well, sure that gas is expensive, right? Like there's a lot of companies that have a lot of financial interest in tracking that, because
right.
a barrel lost is a healthy amount of money, where, you know, water is at like, you know, you usually pay a couple dollars per 1,000 gallons. It's really not that much. But what people aren't realizing is these cities are operating on multi-million dollar water budgets in terms of chemicals, in terms of sourcing their water. A lot of cities buy water from other cities. Lake Louisville up here in the North Texas area, for example, is owned by Dallas. So everybody that gets their water out of Lake Louisville is paying Dallas for that water. So there's a lot of money that's changing hands. And
all our taxes go towards it, too. So we don't really... We see it. We just don't really see it. We don't realize that we're seeing it.
Yep. And water rates are only going up. As we continue to expand, there's more talk that in the North Dallas area here that there's going to have to be another lake that's added to sustain the continued growth for what we're doing.
Yeah, and that's one thing. I don't know how many of the folks here in the Dallas area realize that, but every lake that we have here in Texas, actually in Texas outside of two, are all man-made. Which is nuts. And the two that are not man-made are not in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area and not 100% part of Texas.
Yep.
One is Texoma and one's Texarkana, I believe. I could be wrong on that.
I think you're right. I'm not 100% positive, but I know they're not in the North Texas area,
yeah,
at the very least.
Which is, it's nuts. So, I mean, the fact that we're, creating a lake, which it's not exactly an efficient way to keep water either, or get water or anything else, because you've got evaporation, especially with the heat that we deal with here.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had lots of drought issues, lots of other various weather events that have prevented us for that. There's also mussels, the zebra mussels, the local whatever is going on with the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Creating a lot of problems with the pumps too. That was actually a huge problem for the pumps that pump out the water out of the lake. They were all clogged by zebra mussels,
yep,
for the longest time.
Yeah, so there's a lot of money that goes around, and quite honestly, I believe it's a miracle that water gets from source to your house and is drinkable.
Yeah.
Right? And, I know you've got probably a lot of listeners that are outside of the Dallas area, but everything that's going on in Plano right now with the over-chlorination of water, a lot of people are complaining that that water is over-chlorinated and it's emanating odor and its taste is changing. And I've had people ask me about that, and my response is, I'm not surprised. There's very little control in these systems. There's very little information. I mean, you have to put yourself in the utility operator's seat, right?
Right.
They're pumping water into a black hole. They've got a pipe. They feed that pipe. And then they've got a couple sparse data points that give them feedback into what's going on. And any engineer out there will tell you that if you want a good feedback loop, you got to feed it a lot of data coming back.
Right.
And if you can't do that, you're just making guesses. And that's why these cities struggle. And
the water loss, this goes back to your meter, right? The water loss that you guys were predicting. So one is average water loss for a city is 40%.
27%.
27%.
But we've had cities that we've worked with that have been close to the 40% water loss
range.
Holy
cow.
So every gallon that's pumped, if you're losing 40%, every gallon that's pumped,
yeah,
you're losing four tenths of that gallon.
That's insane.
That's
like getting half a water,
you sourced
like,
it,
milk jug back.
You've treated it. You've pumped it. I mean, all of this has a lot of money tied to it.
Right. And so the other crazy part is your meter can also warn you and say, hey, listen, there's a mains break, or mm-hmm, it's just going back into, you know, some port of under the street or whatever it is.
Yep.
And causing this. And that's also a huge danger as well, as we see in California and other places where sinkholes get created, or you stop that leak and then all of a sudden you've got like another intersection that's just totally undrivable now because the water that was propping it up from all the leaks is now all gone, and so it all crumbles underneath.
Yeah, so the whole premise is you're pumping X amount of gallons, then you've got all these endpoints in the city, and we track not only the residential meters, but we track also the sewer, we track commercial endpoints, and so if you watch all these endpoints and then you start breaking everything down into zones and you're going, okay, a million gallons went into this zone, but we only measured 750,000. Okay, now you know to start tracking down in that zone, and then you can break it down into further chunks. And that's where pressure comes in as well. And
right,
so if you've got a street that's chronically lower pressure than the streets around it, you probably have an issue there. Either that pipe is unable to successfully supply water to that region, or there's an issue. It's leaking, or it's become corroded to the point where it's restricted. Either of which needs attention from the city.
Right.
And so we've had instances where we've notified a city of a mainline break within a minute of it happening. That was all before. Usually what happens is water will be coming up in the street or in somebody's yard, and people will start to call either the water department or city hall.
Yeah,
and
that can be months, weeks later, because they're not going to notice it either. Yep. Plenty of times. Or, you know, even if it within a minute versus, you know, if it's happening on a residential street and 9 to 5, everybody's at work or they're doing their thing during the day, you're not going to notice that.
Yep.
Whereas this saves them, and that's a lot of gallons. That's not just, oh yeah, we lost, you know, 10, 15 gallons. That's usually a couple hundred gallons.
Oh, you know, you could be in the hundreds of thousands of gallons. Easy.
Oh, holy crap.
It's massive amounts of water. And this kind of, one of the other questions that we'll get is, okay, you've automated the meter reads, you're automating the valve actuations, right? Most cities will have a team of people that all they do is drive around and shut people's water off. So we're automating that. We're automating a lot of the back office, billing, things like that. People say, well, what are these people to do? What, you know, their jobs are going away. What are they to do? And my response is, A, rarely do cities fire people. That's a whole other podcast, potentially.
Yeah, that is.
And then B, if you go to any city and say, could you use more labor? Their answer is always going to be yes. Every one of them will tell you, we're under budgeted, we're understaffed. Okay, well, the answer to that is efficiency and automation, right? So if we can come in and we can automate these lower level jobs, well, now you can take those same people and you can have them start fixing infrastructure. You can have them start fixing pipes or identifying leaks or providing better quality of service to customers. And that's where value comes from. You know, politicians like to talk all the time about updating infrastructure and, you know, crumbling roads and bridges and everything else. And Itron, one of our major competitors, but their CEO recently spoke in front of Congress about infrastructure. And specifically in terms of power and water and things they're doing in that space. And I really agreed with him on it that, hey, we're not talking about the problems in water. I wish I'd brought we've got an example of a pipe that was feeding a Sonic in a city that we were going to install a meter, and water was running all over the place. And so we cut back the pipe, and this pipe was literally, you could see through it. The holes were so big.
Swiss cheese?
It was Swiss cheese.
That's crazy.
It was an old cast iron pipe that you could see through.
That is utterly nutty. That's crazy. And then that goes back to, like, how is that water safe to drink? Because if you're getting, on one hand, water that's coming in through that pipe that's coming out of your faucet, then it's a wonder how, like, other dirt and debris that they tried to filter out up and in the filtering plant or the plants, the water, you know, water treatment centers, how that's not ending up back into the pipe in some other way or form or fashion. That's utterly nuts.
And I'm a water snob now. I only drink bottled water or filtered water just because
I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
I've seen how the sausage is made and I'm just like, I don't know if I can do it anymore.
I'm listening to this going, how much do I want to take a risk at? And I can only imagine like that. Plus, like, you know, we expect it for, we're told, and we grew up with, you know, just go grab a glass of water out of the faucet as a little kid. And a little kid or elderly, I mean, you're more susceptible to a whole bunch of things there too, right? So you're trying to like give your little kids bottles and formula and all these other things that rely on water and how much we rely on water for our day-to-day use. So that's one part of it. And then you said overchlorination, which is also interesting because that's another huge problem that you guys are helping with and can kind of are allowing to track, especially as cities kind of grow faster than they can keep up with or certain things can keep up with. And so it's dead ending a pipe, which for our listeners, I'm going to let you kind of explain all that. And then also how that's also not, that's a purposeful water loss, basically.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, you'll have of pipes that dead end, right? They're not looped. And so water has a shelf life. You know, you can't pump it into a system and then drink it a month later. And that shelf life is determined by the amount of chlorine that's left in that water. So you'll see city officials driving around, and usually they'll go to fire hydrants, or they've got certain residents' houses that they've deemed as good test points where they'll go up and they'll just test the chlorine levels of the water at that location. And if it's dropped below a certain point, the only remedy they have is to go to the fire hydrant and flush that pipe. It's called dead-end flushing. And essentially, they just dump millions of gallons back down into the sewer. And it's because that water has gone stale. It's not suitable for the system anymore. Now, where this becomes an issue and where we're going to try and apply data to this is, okay, if a city is in a drought and they have implemented all these water restrictions, they've now told people to use less water. The problem with that is the water's going to go stale. You're going to use it regardless of whether or not it's going onto somebody's lawn. Because if it's going on somebody's lawn, if it doesn't go there, it's going to go out the fire hydrant because it's got to be flushed. Well, the system has to have turnover.
And it's funny, is to your point, right? During a drought, we're told not to water our lawns. But that's not stopping somebody going, oh, I'm just going to run like my washer, my like laundry washer or whatever it is, or mm-hmm. dishwasher even, for like one thing, right? In the case of like, I just threw one pair of jeans in there and it's like super inefficient for a laundry load. Now, I know washing machines are getting more and more efficient and they're smarter and they can sense how much is in there, so they use less water, but that's still mm-hmm. like not stopping that person from yeah. doing that, or stopping that person from using one dish in a dishwasher. That's still a significant amount of water just to use dishwasher and sink and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah.
Or, you know, take a giant bath in their hot tub or something like that. The city's not going to stop that from happening.
Yeah.
But they're going to stop you from watering your lawn, which is even funnier because it's like the one thing that we can monitor from the outside without yep. monitoring people. Whereas this...
Well, you know the way they monitor it, right? In extreme drought conditions, what they do is they take off-duty police officers.
Yeah,
they pay them overtime to go drive around in the middle of the night looking for people running their sprinkler systems on off days.
Yeah.
It's a huge inefficiency.
Yeah.
And I don't think... I think the premise behind these policies are sound and good. I don't think the implementation is. I think we should... And we're working with cities on doing things like, okay, instead of just telling you you can't water, when chlorine levels start to drop to a certain point, what if we let you water your lawn for free? Instead of dumping all that water down down the sewer, okay, well, let's let people use it. Okay,
right.
So during this hour, on this day, you've got free water.
It's totally gamified, which we yeah. know works because people do respond back to things like that, right?
Yep. And the only way you can know, right now, nobody can do tiered billing in water. Power does it all the time. Free night and weekends, all this other stuff. Nobody's doing that in water.
Yeah.
The reason is because the data's not there, right? Nobody can tell you how much water you used between 1 and 2 a.m.
Speaking of which, you've converted, I mean, like you just said it at the very beginning of this podcast, you've converted cities, you know, all the way up to North Dakota, a lot of good chunk of North Texas, I think California also, you have a couple cities out mm-hmm. there and a few other states, which is freaking awesome. I mean, you guys literally started this from a small operation. You guys are growing every day, which is so exciting to see. And I watch you guys grow, which is also the other exciting part, to see it grow and see your lab literally go from something that was like very, very homemade and purpose built to like something that's still purpose built, a lot less homemade looking, which your flow lab still is one of my favorite things like I've seen from a lab yeah. part. It's a really cool lab. But I just want to pick on one of the cities just because it was such a huge event is, you know, a couple months, I can't believe, I think it might have been a year and a half ago at this point. We were going through a drought and then all of a sudden we got torrential downpour of rain. And so the ground could not acclimate to that rain that quickly and flooded the city. And the water meters ended up in a way, and you guys played a pivotal role in that city and helping that city out and, you know, kind of recovering that city a little bit faster, I feel like.
Yeah, so it was the city of Cisco, and they've got their own lake, Lake Cisco, and there's a dam that's gosh, close to 100 years old, that the city owns. And in the 100-year history of that dam, the water's never gone over it. It's trickled, like it's kind of toyed with going over, but it's never gone over. Well, during this these huge rain events, it went over. And not only did it go over, it washed out the whole water treatment plant, and it washed out a large portion of the highway. I think there's two or three ways to get into the city, two or three different highways that are feeding it. Washed out this entire highway. And big deal, right? So now all of a sudden you have a city, and this is out in West Texas, so they're kind of isolated on their own. It's not like they're in, you know, where in the North Texas area, everybody kind of gets water from everybody, and all the cities have 10 different endpoints. No, these they supplied their own water. So that's they lost their source. That's a big deal.
That's a huge deal.
And we were only about halfway implemented, I believe, at the time. But in automating the meter reads and everything else, they were able to continue to monitor the portions of the city that we had installed without having to deploy additional resources to go look at that. The other aspect of that is they lost about, well, FEMA came out and installed a temporary water treatment plant. One of these you see there in the semi-truck trailers. It's like a treatment plant in a truck type
thing.
That's
crazy, but cool.
And, so they rolled up and they installed this thing. Problem is, they're only at about 40 or 50% of their previous capacity.
Right.
So they're under big water restrictions out there now because... And they still don't have their water treatment back up. So they're running on this truck. So at about half their previous capacity, they need to manage their water. And this city was losing 35%+ of their water previously.
Yeah.
And if you're at 50% of your capacity and you're still losing 35% of your water,
that's
a big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
And so now we've got them at sub 10% water loss by installing our system, by auditing the databases, by finding leaks, identifying theft, all sorts of there was all sorts of underlying problems. It's not unique to Cisco. Like, I'm not picking on Cisco.
It's a great example. It's a great case study is basically what it is. Because every city, like you said, there's some all the way up higher and there's some lower. But this is a great case study that everybody can see and go, oh, holy crap, there's importance for here,
yeah.
And this is how it all adds up, and this is kind of cool. This is just an extremely extreme example. I mean, we could have picked on Houston for that fact with Hurricane Harvey affecting it as bad as it did, and it wouldn't have made any difference there. And Houston's a giant metro area, which makes it more magnified of a problem.
Millions of consumers.
Yeah.
It's
a
big, big deal.
Yeah. It's huge. And you know, you think, oh, it's just water. It's like, no, but how many times a day do you interact with your shower, your faucet, brushing your teeth and getting ready in the morning, just that alone, and making your coffee, all of those pieces, and then going from there to how else do you interact with it throughout the whole day, and then what, right?
Yeah.
So
and not only does that system have to work today, it has to work 20 years from now.
Right.
So what are we doing today so that it will ensure it's still working 20 years from now?
And we still have water, and we can still go out in the lake and have fun, and then we can also still, you know, be able to cook and clean and do all the stuff that we deal with on a daily basis. And, you know, there was the Captain Plant while we were growing up in the 80s, right? The cartoon series. It's like, oh my God, they're polluting the water and everything else. Well, it's the same thing. We're keeping an eye on it, and we're helping it all figure itself out and everything else. So, yeah, that's crazy. So, okay, so there's that. Then... I mean, you're still building these cool water meters and deploying them everywhere and everything else. What else are you up to? Or is that keeping you
other
busy
than
enough?
Water meters?
Or is that keeping you busy enough?
You'll have to ask my wife. No, really, really water meters. I mean, that is the big push. We're under a new initiative right now to become a software-centric company. And so we brought on a new director of software named Matt, and he follows the SRE, site reliability engineer principles, which were developed by Google. And so there's a lot of neat stuff we're working on from the software side, because as you know, one of the problems with IoT is you can bring in all this data, what do you do with it?
That is a very, very common thing.
And so we are working, we're doubling down on that question and doubling down on automation and how to do these things.
That is super exciting.
Other than that, I'm just enjoying having a new baby daughter and
it's exciting.
Spending time with her. And
we got to leave the water for her too, right? I mean, that's the generation we care about.
It does change a little bit when you become a father. Because, like talking earlier about doing bottled water and filtered water and all this other stuff, like making her formula in her bottles, I think about that. I'm like, what am I putting into this girl's body? Whereas for myself, you know, especially, I think guys maybe are a little more guilty of this, but especially being a younger guy, you're like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's fine. And maybe it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for joining me this morning. And, you know, we'll hear and see more, I'm sure, of Capstone and everything else that's going on. And now we've got people more thinking about their water. That's exciting.
I hope so.
And thanks to Nerdvana, as you guys can hear in the background, it's a busy coffee shop. It's exciting. And come check us out here, too. We will all see you later.